All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast. We are your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. My name is Robert Winfrey, and I am your host, per usual. Thank you all very much for listening. I'm always humbled by that, and the numbers have ups and downs, but I know that some of you are out there, and I just always appreciate it. So, thank you all very much for that. What do we got on the agenda today? Last night, UFC on ESPN 54. They had to sell tickets. They had an event in front of a crowd, and it was still, I'm not going to say it was, how apologetic about this do I want to be? It was not terrible. Let me start there. I don't think it was terrible. There were problems, though, and we'll get to it. But yeah, so just be aware of them. We'll get to that. Then this coming Saturday, we're back in the warehouse for UFC on ESPN plus 98. Honestly, I kind of clowned that card last week, but after the last couple of events, I'm trying to have a bit of a bright spot, but in all honesty, everything between 299 and 300 has been, it's been a little down. I don't think it's unfair to say that. Yeah, and news, not a lot of news. I mean, I could laugh about another Derek Lewis main event, but I don't feel like devoting a ton of time to that other than to just say, like, what, that's in St. Louis too. Like, we have to sell tickets. And we still just can't stop having these stupid fights in the main event. Like, I guarantee you there's going to be better fights on that card that are not going to be in the main event because reasons. Man, Derek Lewis has had like nine main events in the last like handful of years. I forget exactly how long, but it's a kind of silly number. Ugh. So that's kind of all I've got. Again, not a lot of news this week. I mean, I'll check and make sure everything, nothing crazy has happened while we record, but I don't think anything major broke news-wise this last week. At least nothing that I can remember as I sit here. And if you're screaming at me that something did happen and I just forget it and I've forgotten it, well, my apologies. So that's what we've got. Before we get into the show proper, if you could interact with it a little bit. And I am recording this on Easter Sunday, and look, skip ahead if you don't want to hear this. I'm going to take like 20 seconds. Almost 2,000 years ago, was the atonement and the resurrection. And it's only the most important thing that ever happened on this world or any other, or ever will happen, or ever could happen. But, I'm not here to preach to you. Just want to take a moment to acknowledge that. And yeah, let's move on, shall we? Let's get to UFC and ESPN 54. All right, so that. How did we do? Let's start there. Went 7-6. Ultimately, one fight fizzled. A fight between Victoria Dudakova and Melissa Gatto fell through. I'm not all that happy with 7-6. I'd like it to be better. I think there's only two of these that I really kind of feel I should have gotten. A couple were just close on paper that I picked wrong. I can live with that. We'll get to Weidman and Silva, that debacle. I think Kyle Nelson over Bill Algeo. No, my reasoning was okay there. What was it? Oh, Virna Jandiroba over Lupita Godinez. That one I probably should have got right. You heard me hemming and hawing. I probably should have got that right. The other one I probably should have got right, in all honesty, Dennis Bazukia over Conor Matthews. Got a little bit too cute by half picking on that one. But the other ones I got wrong, Again, we'll get to Weidman and Silva. Buckley and Luque was just always close on paper. And I just hadn't quite made peace with letting go of the best version of Luque and instead dealing with what we've got. So there's that. And then the main event was always close. I felt okay picking Blanchfield. But I can tell you exactly when I. You know what? Oh, sorry, before we get into that. So, year to date, 91-44, three no contests, two fights fizzled. I am putting a bit of an asterisk on the end of this one because I want to see what happens. I'm 99% sure nothing's going to happen with the Weidman and Silva fight, but on the off chance, I'm going to leave this one open to maybe retconning. You're retroactively going back and fixing some of that because boy was that weird. Yeah. But anyway, moving on. So again, I'm still doing okay. Again, my only goal here at the end of the day, I've said this before, is to be better than a coin flip. I had a pretty good run, then I had a negative card. Still only one of those. But the last couple have been a little close for comfort, so hopefully we can do better this next time out. Yes. All right. I can tell you exactly when I knew when I got a really rough feeling about my main event pick. It was during the tail of the tape. Because normally you don't mind picking the fighter that's 10 years younger, but Blanchfield's 23, Fiore's 33. That's a fairly important 10-year gap. That's when I started to go, oh boy, should have double checked that maybe. And if I'd thought about it in those terms, I would have given, I still think I would have picked Blanchfield. I mean, this is not me saying if only I'd, had perfect knowledge, I could have made a perfect prediction. I did not give enough credence to Aaron Blanchfield, one, having a bit more trouble with Tyler Santos than I remembered. Not a lot. She still won the fight fairly. But she kind of had to wear Tyler Santos down, and Santos was accommodating of some of what Blanchfield likes to do in ways that Fiore was not. But the big thing, honestly, the biggest thing about Blanchfield's game that got kind of shown here, exposed, if you will, she doesn't really have a plan B. She has, like, plan A, and then within plan A, she has, like, a 1 and a 2, which are minor variations on plan A. And plan A didn't work here, and it never worked, and she never had something different to offer to this whole proceeding. Fiore just kept cracking her with a kind of a check right hook, just over and over, just coming right over the lead hand, because Fiore's southpaw, Blanchfield was orthodox, so just coming over, just kept cuffing her with that. Would occasionally get some nice straight lefts, then follow with the right hand. Didn't start throwing the sidekick until round, I want to say, three. Then she started throwing it more to the, like the hip or the thigh, just stopping Blanchfield's forward motion. The physical strength of Manon Fiore was a big problem here for Blanchfield. Fiore is not just a physical hoss. She has more than enough technical acumen, but if you have a lot of physical strength, dude, that is just unless you're really good, that can be an insurmountable gap. Now, again, if there's a vast technical disparity, yes, that will play out in favor of the technically superior fighter. But there's a lot to be said for just physicality in this sport. And Fiore out physical. Anytime Blanchfield tried to clinch up, just thrown aside. Couldn't really maintain anything, couldn't get a lot of dominant positions working. There was one takedown from Fiore. Blanchfield threatened to guillotine right away, so they fought back up. But Blanchfield just could never. Her footwork. Oi. It's the kind of footwork you see from a lot of inexperienced fighters who are used to plan A working. They kind of just charge you. They don't cut off the cage very well. They don't enter on angles. They come in a straight line. Blanchfield did that over and over and over again, and Fiore countered her over and over and over again. I think I saw the UFC stat guy, Richard Mann, on Twitter say that someone else watched one on Fiore and went, "Oh, that's Smalley Holmes." And, not an inaccurate comparison. Not an inaccurate comparison at all. Ultimately, Fiore wins 50-45 across the boards. I think it was round four that maybe you could argue. I saw some people give Blanchfield round four. I didn't, but I acknowledge four is probably the closest to the round of the whole fight, really. Closest round of the whole fight is where I was going with that. But if you can stop Blanchfield's plan A, which is not an easy thing to do, mind you, but if you can, she doesn't have layers. That was a problem here. It was a real problem here for her. But that's a problem for a lot of, 22, 23-year-old fighters, especially when they're kind of on top of the world. Some of that experience of not having anything else to do, of not knowing what else to do, you only get that via experience. And if you're lucky, some guys have gotten lucky with this, you still get the win, but you have to take the right lessons from that. Let me give you an example. It's fun to troll the Khabib fans by saying you should have lost the Gleison Tibau fight. You live, the first time I watched that, I did score it for Tibau, for the record. Subsequent rewatches, I'm a bit more amenable to a Khabib scorecard, but here's the thing, man. Khabib didn't have anything but his A game. And Tibau stifled that repeatedly. The problem that Tibau ran into was his offense just never materialized either. And that's kind of what led to Khabib getting that decision. Not because Khabib was overwhelming, but because despite his game not operating optimally, Tibau was stuck on the back foot the whole time. And that can, made enough of a case for the judges at least to give it to Khabib. But Khabib took the right lessons from that. Like, okay, what do I do if I can't get a guy down against the fence? He figured stuff out. And he was kind of lucky to get that. Lucky is the wrong word, but that could have not gone his way, and a lot of people would have understood. Blanchfield here had her A game. It didn't work. Didn't have anything else. And that's a rough lesson to learn. It really is. Most people will run into that at some point in the first like five fights of their career. If you're lucky, you learn the lesson. Not a lot do, actually. Most chalk it up to their skill set failing them. Which is somewhat true. Or, you're young enough and you're early enough in your career, just randomness can happen sometimes. It usually takes two. It's usually the second time that you just don't have much there that you really kind of figure that out. So I expect Blanchfield to figure it out, but she was not really ready for Manon Fiore, which is really weird. Like the way she fought was almost like she hadn't done a lot of tape study. Just, I'm gonna do what I always do. And never mind that a lot of what Fiore does stifles that. So, again, it can be a rough lesson. Fiore after the fight, that poor woman. So after the fight, she says, "I've beaten everybody else in this weight class." Not, she hasn't beaten literally everybody else, but at this point, there is no other contender ahead of her, realistically. And then Michael Bisping immediately goes, "So they're coaching the Ultimate Fighter right now," meaning Shevchenko and Grasso, who are scheduled to fight later this year in their third fight for the flyweight belt. And Bisping just like, "Would you take another fight in the meantime? Are you going to sit on this?" And just, why should she have to sit on this? There shouldn't be another. That's a whole other thing. There were people that were. I saw the joke go around on Twitter, like, congratulations on your win and your title shot in the summer of 2025. Because that's just how this goes. And for some reason, we're still pretending the Ultimate Fighter matters. Just tie up a champion, tie up a challenger, let's just waste 8 months on. I mean, it's not usually 8 months, that's a slight exaggeration on my part, but. I mean, it could be longer. The average might be 8 at this point. We had a bunch that, for a while they were going on time. Hey, we're scheduled here. We're going to fight here. And then you had a few that fell out. You had some that didn't happen. You had replacement fighters. And we still haven't had Chandler and McGregor. And at this point, I don't think we will. But I don't know. We'll see about that. The average might have gone up steadily until. We're taking that out of rotation. We're log jamming a division. You've got a clear number one contender, and we're just drama farming a show that airs exclusively on ESPN Plus that nobody watches. Does anyone watch The Ultimate Fighter anymore? Mean, I look, man, the last. Okay. I watched the season with all the flyweights because they had legitimately good fighters and legitimately good fights. Prior to that, I had tapped out partway through. I want to say it was Bisping and Miller. This is Michael Bisping and Jason Miller. I think it was partway through their season that I said, I can't do this. Might have been the one after. But it's that one or the one right after, and I can't remember. I can never quite remember which one because they kind of blur together, and they both weren't very good, all things considered. Fiore should be your next title challenger. There should not be any dispute about this. Blanchfield hopefully learns the appropriate lessons coming out of this, and it wasn't a great fight, man. This card. Ugh. Okay. So it started late. This thing started 5. The prelims. First prelim started 5 p.m. my time. Now, I know 6 hours. So the thought so that turns into this is probably going to wrap up around 11 my time. That's 1 a.m. Eastern on ESPN. This thing didn't wrap up until like 1:30. Might have been later even. This was a badly paced main card. Very badly paced. There were long stretches of nothing happening. And some of the fights weren't exactly great, but what a terrible night for officiating too. Man, the refs. We had the B squad out there, and it kind of showed. I mean, you had Vitor Ribeiro. If you don't know who Vitor Shaolin Ribeiro was, by the way, that guy used to be one of the very best, one of the best lightweights in the world. Fought in Shudo, fought in, I think it was Deep. He might have had a couple of fights in Pride. I'd have to double check, and I don't care enough to look up. Was a very, very, very good fighter. Making some weird calls. You had Mini Brock, Gary Copeland, who just, and we'll talk about it when we talk about Weidman and Silva, just dropping the ball all over the place there, man. I mean, Keith Peterson probably did the best job out of the refs that we saw, and it was one of his stoppages that I didn't love. I forget which one. Maybe it'll come to me, but there, I mean, just badly handled stuff all the way around. All night. Like, this was a theme. Lot of low blows on this card. Lot of eye pokes. But the UFC won't fix the terrible gloves because nobody is going to hand them Trevor Whitman talked about this. Like, he came up with what he thought was a better design. And the UFC said, great, sign everything over to us. So we'll give you something. And then the rest of this is ours for now and forever. And like, nobody takes that deal because that's a really bad deal. But no, we're not gonna deal with that, I guess. But yeah, not a great night for the officiating crew. On top of a just badly paced event, 14 fights was always too. That's too many fights, guys. That's just too many fights. You're asking way too much of your audience. Even if you only tune in for the main card, everything gets stagnated. Ugh. Sorry, more on that later, maybe. But good win for Fiore. I may not have given her full due last week, but she's got a really good shot at wearing that gold. I'm not guaranteeing it, but you would be a fool to discount her chances. So, co-main event then was originally listed as Weidman and Silva. They got switched to Luka and Buckley in the co-main event. Joaquin Buckley wins, ground and pound punches, 3:17 of the second. Moderately competitive first round, but Buckley's firepower at welterweight is not to be trifled with. That guy was bringing some heat. Luka at this point just looks a little too shop worn. He seemed to check out mentally in that second round. Again, okay-ish first round. Buckley won it. Second round, like he's just. I don't know. He kind of shuts off mentally. They tie up at one point. He just kind of pulls half guard, then gets full guard, but Buckley's on top and just punches him, and he doesn't do a whole lot about it. So the ref winds up stepping in. Luque looks a little shot. I don't want to say completely shot, but I don't think he's. I think all the fights, because that guy's been in the UFC for a long time. And he's had an except parts of his run were very exceptional. In fact, you could argue he should have been higher rated than he was, but nobody ranked above him would fight him. Him and Santiago Ponzinibbio both had that problem. I mean, dude, Luque stopped Belal Muhammad with strikes. Luque at his best was no one to trifle with. He wasn't unbeatable, but you could not take that guy for granted. Now, just a little shop worn, and it's kind of to be expected. And I think, this fight, more than a lot, felt a little bit like that moment of realization for a lot of us. Like, okay, that old version of him is not coming back. But good win for Buckley. He wants to fight on the upcoming St. Louis card. Said in the post-fight press that the UFC needs to bump Derek Lewis and Rodrigo Nascimento from the main event, put him in there because he's going to be ranked now. Get him a ranked opponent, and they'll do it. I wouldn't object to that, but me and my distaste of mid-level heavyweight main events, and that's what Derek Lewis versus Rodrigo Nascimento is. Like, who is putting this fight on, going, yeah, that's not going to go 25 minutes? It probably is. And it's probably gonna suck. Ugh. But good win for Buckley. Next up, Chris Weidman. Originally ruled a TKO win for him in the third. Changed retroactively to a technical decision of 30-27 across the board for Weidman. Weidman benefiting from USADA not being around anymore, it looks like. Just saying. Silva's another guy who might be a little bit more worn down than a lot of us might have thought. He was a little bit gun shy here, a little bit repetitive. I'm going to give Weidman his props in some respects. Looked a lot better here than he has previously. Was it. Able to throw some kicks again, mentally and clearly physically held up. Didn't look like a world beater, but looked like a guy who should be in the UFC, which you could argue for a while that might not have been true. So a little bit of credit goes there. The problem, though, is the finish in particular. So he pokes Bruno Silva in the eye four times over the course of this fight. I don't know what to say about this. Look, there's an exchange in the second round where Silva punches Weidman in the eye, and Weidman pokes Silva in the eye, and they both and Silva does the he pokes me in the eye thing. And Weidman goes, "No, he poked me in the eye." And the referee breaks both of them up, like, okay, hang on. Silva's thumb from a closed fist caught Weidman in the eye. If the fist is closed, it's legal. You can't hang the thumb out there on the end of your fist because that's no longer a closed fist. But if I make a fist and I punch you and the knuckle of my thumb is what makes contact with something on you, that's legal. It's uncomfortable, and I certainly don't want that going into my eye, neither does anyone else, but that's legal. That's a punch. Under the definition of a punch used by mixed martial arts. Weidman was poking him in the eye. Who does this guy think he is? John Jones? Sorry, I joke about that, but. So, again, a couple of eye pokes. Referee grabs both guys and says, "You're both reaching. You both have your hands out." That might have been in the third round, actually, now that I think about it, but. So don't quote me there, but it's one of those. It's either second or third. Referee tells both guys, "Knock it off. You're both doing the hands out thing, fingers pointed at your opponent." Restarts the fight immediately. Weidman, both guys, but Weidman in particular, just nope, doing this. Then on the finishing flurry, Silva comes in. Weidman pokes him with his left hand, takes a step back, kind of gets a punch, pokes him with his right hand, and then lands a punch. Sort of lands a punch. Silva drops, holding his eyes, and Weidman jumps into the ride position and starts pounding on him until the ref jumps in. No. Okay. Look, man, I expressed last week how much admiration I have for Chris Weidman's career. I really do. And this is not about my accuracy ratio. You can't let this happen from an officiating standpoint. So, again, they originally rule it a TKO. Referees look and like, oh no, eye pokes rendered him unable to continue. We're late in the third round. Let's do a technical decision. By the way, the referee does not deduct any points from Chris Weidman, so it's 30-27. Weidman had won the first two rounds fair and square, by the way. I'm sorry, man. If you're not going to deduct points for multiple eye pokes, and if multiple eye pokes leading to the finish don't result in anything other than a victory for the guy, if the guy who's doing the poking gets rewarded like this, like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? Yeah, there's a, I think it's a philosophy principle in play. Rules or laws or whatever, they're only those things if you enforce them. At least, I don't want to get too deep into this, because there's an argument to be made about deeper principles at play here, but generally speaking, if any system that man sets up, the laws imposed by that system are only laws imposed by that system if they're enforced. Very easy example of this. Say there's a road. Speed limit is posted at 35 miles an hour. Everybody drives 45 miles an hour on the road. Nobody's ever pulled over and ticketed for it. What's the speed limit on the road? Rules say, don't poke your opponent in the eye. Okay, I'm going to poke him in the eye. Then what? Then what? Okay, well, you got a warning that first time. Okay. You know what? Maybe that's the appropriate call. Maybe. Did it again. Did it again. Did it again. And when, by the way, those last two led to the finish. What is the penalty for this? Nothing. Just nothing. Weidman, after the fact, going, you know, my advice to him is you can't fall down like that even if you get fouled. The hilarious side effect of it, bear in mind, this guy desperately tried to milk getting kneed in the head by Gegard Mousasi. He's, no, I was down and I can't continue. And only to get slapped with a fair TKO loss. Matt, I don't know how you burn so much goodwill so quickly. But a big segment of the fan base did not like how Weidman handled that. Count me among them, by the way. Silva's already announced he's going to appeal. I wish him the best of luck. I think he was wronged. Straight up, I think he was wronged here. They're not going to do anything about it because no athletic commission. You can count on one hand the number of times a ruling like this has been overturned. It just doesn't happen very often. So, really sucks for him. Really sucks for him. And, yeah, just again, bad officiating all the way around. I mean, technically speaking, under the newer rules that everyone uses, you're not allowed to extend your fingers towards your opponent, regardless of whether or not you poke them. So, in theory, the first eye poke should be a foul, especially if it comes from that position. Or the first eye poke should be like a point deduction, but it never is. Because, yeah, of course it's not. I mean, I'm the guy out here who occasionally says I wouldn't hate seeing what MMA looks like if groin strikes were legalized, because I would be curious. Even I'm not advocating for eye gouging to be fine. A real sour cloud over this is really what that amounts to. Real sour cloud. Moving on. Speaking of eye pokes, Nursultan Ruzboyev defeated Cedricus Dumas via TKO, punches, 3-7, excuse me, sorry, 3-18 of the first. There we go. Ruzboyev looked okay. A little bit slow start from both guys. But once again, we have a finish that's impacted by an eye poke. Little bit of an eye poke. Not a huge one, but enough to get Dumas going, ow, my eye, because the eye is a sensitive organ. The referee says, fight on, which, blown call by the ref, this was an eye poke, but Ruzboyev gets closer and just hammers him with uppercuts until he falls. Referee said, fight on. Can't blame Ruzboyev for... It is not his job to call fouls. The problem was, like, after the fact, he says, no, it was a perfectly fine thing. I punched him in the eye, not poked him. At the exact same time, they're showing a replay of his finger poking Cedricus Dumas in the eye. Again, bad night of officiating. Bad night. Good enough win for Ruzboya. I still don't have a great handle on that guy. Like, he's clearly got a lot of ability and got a lot of fights. But his UFC stuff has been, it's been a bit short. And it's not just been short in the way like, oh, he just ran through some of those guys. This was a slower start, and which is not a bad thing necessarily, but it deserves to be acknowledged that it was. I don't know. Again, all these fouls put a pretty big damper on everything. Kyle Nelson defeated Bill Algeo via TKO punches at 4 minutes of the first round. This was one of those stoppages that some people were upset about. Felt a touch early to me, but more like safe early than indefensibly early. They've had a pretty good fight back and forth. It's going fairly even until finally Algeo kind of catches Nelson with a punch. Wobbles him. Chases him down, keeps landing. Algeo keeps trying to fire back, but he's never quite gets his equilibrium back. So Nelson is able to keep landing, and finally just lands a couple that kind of stagger Algeo, and the ref jumps in and And Algio wasn't very thrilled with that. But, solid enough fight, and for as long as it lasted. Kyle Nelson, if he sorted out his cardio issues, that dude could be a problem at featherweight. And kicking off the main card, oh, the scoring here. Chidian Jaquani defeats Rhys McKee via split decision. 230-27s for Chidian Jaquani and a 29-28 for McKee. That 29-28 for McKee is ridiculous. I could accept, what round was it? The first round was just low activity enough and slow paced enough that maybe you favored McKee a little bit. I didn't. Because McKee didn't do a whole lot on the feet at distance, forced a lot of clinches, and then couldn't do anything from them. But second and third rounds, bare minimum, second and third should not be up for debate here. Njokuani did the better work. He landed the more damaging strikes. Oh no, he was controlled against the, not even on the mat, on the fence. Okay, what did McKee do with it? Nothing. Ridiculous. The judge scored that for McKee. Absolutely ridiculous. This was Chidi and Jaquani's move down to welterweight for the first time in the UFC. He's tall for that weight class. Curious to see what he might do against somebody who keeps a better pace. But he was running into some problems at middleweight, so that makes sense. Yeah, that was your main card, and just weird judging, weird officiating, badly paced, horribly paced. Not a great viewing experience. Not a great viewing experience. Prelims, Nate Landwehr knocks out Jamal Emmers, 443 of the first. Emmers looked good early. He really did. He was coming out fighting long. Wobbled Landwehr, cut him open with an elbow, pretty bad cut up on the forehead. Well, more like in the hairline. But Landwehr just made it ugly. Persevered through some damage. Started finding some holes in the guard of Emmers, landing some straight punches. Got close, would hit him with a barrage of uppercuts, just wouldn't stop. Eventually gets through with an uppercut at range, drops him, pounds him out on the ground. Nate Landwehr is a very MMA fighter, which, listening to his post-fight interviews and whatnot, like, bless him, and I don't mean that pejoratively. You know, this guy, I think it was his second fight in the UFC because he lost his debut, but said, you know, if I don't lose, I'm probably going to win, which, on the surface, is one of those quotes that, like, you kind of laugh at because, duh. What he's expressing, though, is if you don't stop me, I'm going to get to you eventually. So his quote from this one was, I apologize for the profanity, but, you know, come whoop my ass and see what happens. Like, and it, you know what? Again, we all kind of get what he's going at there. Like, come ahead. You might get some damage off, but you better be ready for the receipt. Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention it. Ruzaboyev called out Gerald Merchart, which I think is a fair call out, and I would be interested in that fight. Landwehr, again, just that guy is an entertaining fighter. He's probably never gonna really, you know, be at the top of the division, but there's always room for TV fighters. I don't mean that as an insult. A TV fighter is the kind of fighter you have to watch because they're always entertaining. And Landwehr, pretty darn good at that. Strawweight, Verna Jandiroba defeated Lupita Godinez via unanimous decision. 229-28 and a 30-27. Godinez had some success for stretches. The problem is, if she ever got taken down, she would give her back. And Jandiroba is an excellent back taker. And then Jandiroba just kind of rode out rounds. Rode out the end of the first round was going kind of even. And then with around a minute, maybe a little less, Janjiroba gets a takedown against the fence. Again, is able to get to the back, works from there, enough to win the round. Then second round I gave to Godinez. Third, again, kind of the same thing. Janjiroba does okay. Yeah, does okay on the feet. She was eating some punches though, man. Her face got, a little messed up. But Godinez just once or twice made a weird decision. And well, I mean, the second round had a lot of like leg entanglement fighting from both women. They got tied up in a weird position at one point. And I thought Godinez won the round because she was actually the one threatening with the leg entanglement, whereas Janjiroba wasn't. But it was also a weird enough round that I'm not up in arms over 30-27. I just don't agree with it. Then again, third round, once again, Janjiroba gets a bit of a takedown against the fence. Not much of one, but Godinez can't quite keep her back flush to the cage when wall walking. Janjiroba gets it. And just has a good, again, good close to the round. So good on her. Tough fight. This was not an easy win, but she gutted through a couple of tough positions and ultimately got it done. So good on her. Julio Arce missed weight, but TKO'd Herbert Burns 2 minutes into the second round. About as expected here. Featherweight Dennis Bazukia TKO's Conor Matthews 22 seconds into the third round. Bazukia looked pretty darn sharp here. Handled the forward pressure of Matthews okay. Landed some nice counter punches. It finally looks like he's kind of got his feet settled for the UFC experience. So, good win for him. Light heavyweight Ibo Aslan defeated Anton Turkali via TKO, 120, excuse me, 132 of the third. This fight kind of sucked. I know, like I hate to phrase it this way because it sounds deeply uncharitable. But the meathead fans kind of like, yay, look at some of these exchanges when it's just two donks standing squared up and just winging haymakers at each other. Just, ugh. Not very interesting. Turkoglu probably getting cut here. This is like 0-4 in the UFC for him. Middleweight Jacob Malkoon TKOs Andrei Petroski 39 seconds into the second round. Oh, by the way, I mentioned there were a lot of groin strikes. So Burns actually got a point deducted in the first after like the second or third time he hit Arce in the groin. But anyway, Malkoon and Petroski. Yeah, Petroski's gas tank is just such an issue. His chin might be a bit of an issue too, the way some of these fights have gone. Here, something weird happened on this finish. He goes in for kind of a single leg, takes a bit of a punch on the crown of the head that kind of maybe rattles him. Then he plows into like right around the hip of Malkoon looking for the single leg. Malkoon, bit of down blocking, limp legs, and Petroski just kind of. So Malkoon, limp legs, pivots, and now he's like perpendicular to Petroski, and instead of reorienting, Petroski just kind of old man staggers forward and drops to his hands and knees. Malkoon runs up and soccer kicks him in the body, which, yes, please. Really nice. Gets the stoppage soon after. Not quite sure what rattled Petroski, but between, again, kind of maybe getting clipped and then head into the hip, just whatever it was, he was holding on to Malkoon like, oh boy, like my balance isn't here. Once Malkoon disengaged, all he did was kind of fall forward. Yeah, good enough win for Malkoon because Malkoon had won the first round too. Yeah, I'd give it him the first. Yeah, after the he was coming off a DQ loss in a fight he was dominating. Got to pick your weapons though. I didn't even hate the DQ. Like, it sucks when you're winning, but if you screw yourself like that, that's you got to be better about that. And then kicking everything off, Keelan Lochran defeated Angel Pacheco via unanimous decision, 230-27 and a 30-26. Not a lot here. I think the second round could have been 10-8 for Lochran. After the fight, Lochran, he didn't get a post-fight interview, but he called out Raul Rosas. Whatever. I would be okay with that, but again, kind of whatever. So, yeah, your fight of the night went to Aslan and Turkali, which would not have been my fight of the night. That was just low-level meathead swinging. Not interesting. Performances went to Landwehr and Bazookia. Yeah, that's about right, in all honesty. I would have thrown one Malkoon's way, maybe, because I love me a soccer kick to the body, but yeah, that was it. Again, this was a long event, had pacing issues, riddled with officiating issues, a couple of weird scorecards. Honestly, just my full report's in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com. Please go read it, but this was not really a great night of fights, if I'm being perfectly honest. So, yeah. Before I move on to talking about UFC and ESPN Plus 98, this is somewhat related. So let me just to close out the discussion of UFC on ESPN 54. So there's an MMA media personality, the MMA guru, whose stuff I don't watch. I know of his existence. He's got a bigger channel than me, so you know, whatever. When I say I'm aware of his existence, but don't watch his stuff. I'm not trying to big brother anything. Like, I am selective about my MMA content consumption, and his stuff is not for me. Plenty of people do like it. Godspeed, party on. Don't, no hate towards him or anyone who enjoys his stuff. But a clip of him circulated a little bit today that was him being very sad and just complaining largely about like the watered down product and the last couple of events and how, you know, we're back in the warehouse without fans or atmosphere, and it's all just, you know, the UFC is not what it used to be. And I don't know how much he might be putting on for the camera. Okay, let me start there. Let me also offer a suggestion. Yeah, so first of all, before I get to my suggestion, he's not wrong. If you look at the cards from same month, Look at the cards that the UFC produced in March of 2019 compared to what they've done in March of 2024. There is a sharp decline in quality. I don't think that's an arguable point. So there's that. So again, this is not wrong to observe that the product is watered down and a lot of these are uninteresting. You're not wrong, man. You're really not wrong. Here's my suggestion to you, sir. And I know this is difficult. I come on here. I've been honest about this before. If this was not my job, there's quite a few of these I would skip. There's certainly large stretches of the event I would skip, if not whole cards. But it is my job. It is my job to talk about these things from start to finish. And I envy those who have the editorial mandate or editorial freedom to be like, you know what? I'm going to watch this the next day so I can skip the commercials. And hey, tell me what fights aren't worth watching. And for a lot, especially these fight nights, like that is the right, that would be the right way to do this. Especially with everything available instantly on demand. That would be the right way to do this. I don't have that luxury because I cover these start to finish. It's my job. If your job is just to talk about MMA, like if this podcast was my job, I'm not paid for the podcast, by the way, I would be a lot more selective about what I watched, about what I talked about here, and this would probably be more akin to Jack Slack's post-fight stuff, where he's getting very selective and a bit more detail-oriented because his brain isn't just covered in the sludge of mid-level, forgettable, repeatable, can't quite figure out if that fight happened this week or last week, or wasn't this the same fight that we had 3 weeks ago? Like, that quagmire is real. 6 hours every Saturday is a lot. And if you are not required to watch every fight on a card, my sincere advice is don't. 100% sincerity, don't. It's healthier for your fandom. It is healthier for your fandom and for you as an individual to not watch six and a half hours of this stuff every Saturday. Don't make this sport your personality. Please don't. Have other things. Have other hobbies. Because this is not a thing that will ever love you back. Ever. No one in the UFC management, none of the fighters, none of the punditry, none of all the other separate entities that make up, none of the fans, none of these separate entities that make up kind of what goes into MMA is ever going to love you back. Ever. And I know this because bigger people, and again, this is not a shot at the MMA guru as far as size goes. He's got a bigger following than I do. I'm not. But bigger people than him have been blackballed, ostracized, and abused by the MMA fans, other MMA outlets, the UFC brass, etc., etc., etc. It will never, ever love you back. Ever. Watch it if you enjoy it. If you think that something upcoming is not going to bring you enjoyment, don't watch it. I can remember the exact moment I had this with professional wrestling. Because my relationship with professional wrestling has been off and on, hot and cold, throughout the years, right? I remember it was the middle of a Monday Night Raw. This would have been early-ish into the Authority gimmick. And I'm watching this, and it's, you know, we're like, I don't know, about an hour into it. I can't remember if this is when they'd gone to 3 hours yet, gone back to 3 hours yet, or if this was still two. I think it was three. I think they had kind of made that switch recently, or was right before they were going to. Again, forgive me, the exact timeline is hazy. But when I say I remember what was going on, I remember watching say it was Corporate Kane was involved. And I'm watching this, and I just kind of went, I am not enjoying this. I haven't enjoyed the last several weeks. I'm not enjoying this. I'm probably not going to enjoy the next one. What am I doing? I can do other things with my Monday night. And I stopped. And now I only watch professional wrestling if I'm paid to, is kind of the long and the short of it. Because most of it does not appeal to me, and that's fine. This is not me saying that it sucks. This is not me saying it needs to change. This is me saying it's an entertainment product. If you're not entertained by it and you're not enjoying it, stop. This is true of movie franchises, television shows, sports teams, sports leagues, and the MMA or boxing or whatever. If that's where you are, be more selective. Again, if I had to, if all I did was talk about this once a week, I would be so much more selective with what I do, with what I watch. So much more selective. But because it's my job, I don't. I watch it all. To various benefits and detriments. But I don't think it's unfair to say we're in kind of a slump. 299 was stacked. 300's pretty stacked. Everything in between is going to suffer. And the first like handful of events after UFC 300 are going to suffer. I mean, UFC 301 was clearly not designed to look the way it looks. I don't think it'll be I'm not saying it'll be a bad pay-per-view. I'm saying we can be honest and say that was not the intended lineup for that card. For whatever reason, it got shuffled around. And again, you have to manipulate the moving pieces, but they went out of their way for, you know, look, 298 wasn't bad either, for the record. But we're in a slump, and it's going to be a little bit awkward until things kind of level back out. If you need to take a break, do so. No one will hold it against you. At least no one who matters. All right. Off my soapbox on respect to that. Let us move on then, shall we, to UFC on ESPN Plus 98. Alrighty. Our main event, Brendan Allen and Chris Curtis. These two fought, how long ago was it? December of 21. Chris Curtis defeated Brendan Allen at that time. Allen has not lost since. He went the distance with Jacob Melk. He beat Sam Alvey, which, whatever, Sam Alvey in 2022. Choked him out. Got a decision over Malkoon and then submitted, in order, Christoph Yatko, Andre Muniz, Bruno Silva, and Paul Craig. Curtis, who I think I may have picked to beat him. Coming off a weird fight with Marc-Andre Barrio. I thought he won, but the first two rounds were such nothing burgers that 29-28 either way was fine. He had the no contest with Nassourdin Imavov before that. The loss to Kelvin Gastelum, that probably should not have been a loss because there was a clash of heads there too. Honestly, if this were three rounds, I might be leaning Curtis again. If this were three rounds, I would lean Allen. This time around, Curtis just has become a little bit slower to pull the trigger. I don't mean reaction time. I mean strategically, he's a bit more comfortable countering. But five rounds of facing that can be rough, or it can be just utterly boring. I am not entirely sure how to feel about this one. Allen is certainly on the better run at the moment. I think that's real. I don't know, man. I've kind of believed in Chris Curtis at various points in time. And he's frequently paid off for me. Allen is not the same guy as when they fought the first time. That's definitely true. Here's the thing, though. The style that Chris Curtis has, I don't know how that goes over five rounds for you. Has he ever? He's gone into the fourth before. Got a corner stoppage between rounds four and five in 2020 before he got to the UFC. Went the distance with Matt Dwyer in 2019. That's certainly nothing to sneeze at. Okay, he's been five a handful of times, now that I look back at more of his career. I'm really going to rock with him. Oh, hang on, how old is he? He's only 36. Got a lot of fights, though. Allen's 28. Yeah, coming into the top of your powers, which is kind of what Allen's starting to do at 28. Yeah, let me go with Allen. Not by a whole lot. What are the odds on this one? About 2-1 with Curtis. Or, sorry, with Allen. About 2-1 with him. You know, plus 170 or so on Chris Curtis. Again, don't gamble if you don't mind losing, but over five rounds, that is not, it would not be a terrible wager. All right, next up, co-main event, Alexander Hernandez and Damon Jackson. Hernandez coming off a loss to Bill Algeo. Hasn't won at featherweight yet. Has that one win over Jim Miller at lightweight in 23, but man, he's really been, that guy's really been up and down. Thinking about Damon Jackson, though, got stopped by Dan Ige, lost a decision to Billy Quarantillo. He beat Pat Sabatini, though. I mean, his UFC losses are Ilya Topuria, Dan Ige, and Billy Quarantillo. Like, those are good guys. Jackson, 35. Hernandez, 31. Here's the thing. I'm not sold on Hernandez's cardio at featherweight. Jackson's had some durability issues, though. I don't know. I'm going with Jackson. I'm not sold on Hernandez at this weight class. Could be very wrong, and this is one I do not feel all that confident in, but could be. Next up at featherweight, we have Morgan Charrier and Jose Mariscal. I got a soft spot for Chippe, since he beat Trevor Peak up at lightweight. 2-0 in the UFC, wins over the aforementioned Trevor Peak. He injured the arm of Jack Jenkins. That was a tough fight before that, though. He's on a five-fight overall winning streak. Charrier, the last pirate, though. 19-9-1 overall, four-fight winning streak. Successful UFC debut last year. He beat Manolo's. They gave him kind of a, not a full-on gimme, but they did not throw him into the deep end because he made his debut. Was that on that French card? Yeah. Yeah, it was. How do I feel about this one? Charrier is very dynamic. Mariscal, Chepe, though, he's durable. He'll make it ugly. I think this is Charrier, though. He feels like the safe pick. Which I don't mean as a bad thing. But I think I am going to go with him. Let's see, lightweight Ignacio Bahamondes and Christos Yagos. Bahamondes, coming off the loss to Ludovic Klein. Three fights in a row before that, Roberts, Rong Zhu, and Trey Ogden. Ogden win was not, Ogden win was, that's aged pretty darn well, actually. Yagos, 1-3 in his last four, only wins over Ricky Glenn. Lost to Armin Saryukin and Thiago Moises. No hate there. Daniel Zellhuber caught him with an anaconda choke, though, and Baumundes also has that long frame. I think this is Baumundes. I'm not trying to discount Yagos, but this is the kind of fighter he has struggled a lot with. So, Baumundes it is. Heavyweights. Dear Lord, why? Walter Walker and Łukasz Drzeszki. Drzeszki, 8-4-1. He's, what, 0-2 in the UFC? 0-3, jeez. Martin Bidet, Carl Williams, Waldo Cortez Acosta. That's not the easiest three-fight introduction to the UFC. I'll cut him a little slack there, but also, yeah. Walter Walker, 11-0. Name is the Clean Monster. Okay, then. He's from Brazil, fighting out of... This man has ruined my gimmick. He's a Brazilian fighting out of Russia. What the heck do I do with this? I can't... Oh, man. This guy. He figured it out. Sorry, I have a long-standing tradition of like picking Russians to beat Brazilians because I was around when a bunch of Brazilians got salty over Fedor beating Nogueira. I mean, they got their revenge when Verdum tapped out Fedor, but just, again, it just kind of amuses me. That has played surprisingly well for me, especially picking them to beat Brazilians in Brazil. Yeah, good winning streak for Walker, excuse me. Made Alex Nicholson quit last time out. Is he beaten? This is his UFC debut, so is there anyone on his record I recognize? Sometimes there is. Do I know Cassio de Oliveira? Look at that guy real fast. Not a lot. I want to say vaguely. I think I know him from his losses more than anything. Okay. Again, this is heavyweight. I don't feel bad about picking Walker here. Brazilian fighting out of Russia. That. I might have to just pick this man forever. just on principle. All right. Jokes aside, kicking off the main card. Speaking of TV fighters from earlier, we have Trevor Peak and Charlie Campbell. Trevor Peak is prone to parking lot brawls in the UFC cage. So, he's 1-1 in the UFC. 2-1 in the UFC, excuse me. Yeah, beat Eric Gonzalez, lost to Mariscal, then beat Muhammad Yahya. I forgot about the Muhammad Yahya win. Here's kind of the problem, though. Like, Peak stopped being, for want of a better expression, a meme fighter. And I actually think he was better when he leaned into it. Anyway, Charlie Campbell here. Fights out of the Sarah Longo camp, or Longo and Weidman, whatever it is now. Let's see. Had a successful UFC debut over Alex Reyes. I don't really recall that. What are his losses? Lost to Chris Duncan on the Contender Series. I'm tempted to pick Peak because it's funny. And I don't mean that as an insult. Like, he's got a kind of fun fight, but again, it's kind of funny. Take you a long way on the regional scene, not quite as far in the cage. Now, let's not be silly, Robert. We'll go with Campbell. But in fairness, minor note here, if Campbell's not ready for the wild man, like, you can wild man your way to a surprising amount of success in MMA if you've got a decent chin and are not afraid of walking into the fire. Trevor Peek has a decent chin and is not afraid of walking into the fire. On the prelims, let's see here. Court McGee versus Alex Morono. Again, I got a soft spot for McGee, but it doesn't extend this far. McGee is almost 40. Okay, sorry, he's freshly 39. He'll be 40 in December, so freshly 39. He's just coming off of, he's what, 2-5? 2-fight losing streak to Jeremiah Wells and Matt Brown. Like, I respect Court McGee. I really do. He's a little bit past it. As much as Morono is a little bit up and down and a little bit worn for a guy who's only 33, this is very much a Morono kind of fight. So I'm rooting for Court McGee, but I can't pick with my rooting interest. That's asking for trouble. Women's bantamweight, Norma Dumont and Jermaine Durandamy. Who could possibly care about this? Let's see here. Dumont hasn't lost since dropping a split decision to Macy Chasson in 2022. That was close. 3-fight winning streak. Jermaine Durandamy, I believe, is coming back after an extended absence. She's 39. Yeah, her last fight was choking out. She choked out Juliana Pena in 2020. I had forgotten about that. Oh, that's so funny in hindsight. See, Durandamy. Oh, right. She got pregnant. Had to have been something else. She gave birth last year. Like, we're talking October of 2020. 3.25 years. Unless you gave birth early and we're like, no, I would just rather be the, kind of stay-at-home mom. What happened here? She had some kind of an injury in 21. Yeah, like 3.5 years, actually. Jeez. All right. That layoff is real. Durandamy being almost 40. Ugh. This is, under normal circumstances, I would pick Durandamy without a whole lot of hesitation here. Under these considerations, I think I'll lean towards Dumont, but let's see. Bantamweight, Alatong Hele and Victor Hugo. Alatong Hele lost to Chris Gutierrez. Had a couple of wins before that. Had a draw with Gustavo Lopez. Man, his only loss is in the UFC. Okay, Casey Kenney, Chris Gutierrez. What's up with Hugo? Tell me about Victor Hugo. He is 24 and so Alatong Hele is 16-9-2. Hugo 24-4. That's a solid record. 13-fight winning streak. That's pretty good. Making his UFC debut here. Hele is a tough draw for your debut, and bantamweight is not an easy division. The odds on this are close. Very close. Tilting ever so slightly towards Hugo. I'm gonna go with that. I think I am. Just a little bit. But one of these times I'm just going to pick favorites the entire time and it's going to go very, very badly for me. I can feel it. See, women's strawweight, Pierre Rodriguez. Rodriguez? Rodriguez. She is Ecuadorian? Venezuelan. Sorry. Flag is similar. She is 9-1, 2-1 in the UFC, coming off a loss to Jillian Robertson. Had beaten Kay Hansen and Sam Hughes, kind of whatever. Cynthia Calvillo, boy, did that woman fall off. She's on a 5-fight losing streak. Now, in fairness, that's Caitlin at the time, Chookagie, and Jessica Andrade, Andrea Lee. Then two split decisions, one to Nina Nunes and one to Lupita Godinez. Which was the one I thought you could. Which one had a better case for her? I can't remember. I want to say there was one of those that I might have scored for. No, I don't think I scored either for her, but there was one of those that I thought was closer than the other. This is do or die for Calvillo. Straight up. Did I say last time I was going to be done picking her? I'm going to pick her here. This will be, if she loses this time, one, she's probably getting cut, but at a bare, like, this might be me beating my head into the wall a little bit. But I'm gonna give this one more shot. If she can't win this kind of fight, she's a bust. Total bust. Bantamweight, determined Dan Argueda and John Matsumoto. Let's see here. Argueda is 9-1. He's what, 1-1 in the UFC? 1-1 with two no contests in the UFC. There was the premature stoppage against Ronnie Lawrence, and then the what was it with Miles Johns? Johns failed a drug test. Johns won that fight originally, but so Argueda here, little bit on his last legs. Only win is over Nick Aguirre. Matsumoto 14-0. Let's see, where's he fight? Do I know where he fights out of? Do I know the like coach? I do not. Coming off the Contender Series, feels like softer touch for his UFC debut here. Yeah, that's kind of what this feels like. So now let's go with Matsumoto. Let's see, what do we got next? Middleweights, Dylan Budka and Cesar Almeida. Almeida 4-0 coming into his UFC debut. Has a decent-ish kickboxing record. Fought for glory, not very successfully, jeez. Look at this guy's deal. Yeah, mostly a kickboxer. That seems to be what he's mostly known for. What is up with Budka here? He is 7-2. His nickname is the Mindless Hulk. Fair enough. Two fight winning streak. Coming off a Contender Series appearance. Being anyone I know of? No, not really. He's a wrestler. Almeida's a kickboxer. Almeida's an inexperienced in MMA kickboxer too. Again, only 4-0. Yeah, Budka. No, misspelled that. U, not E. There we go. All right, women's bantamweight, Nora Conole and Melissa Mullins. Conole, 7-1. She had like a weak debut. No, she beat Jocelyn Edwards. It was an okay win. Mullins, 6-0. I remember, and she, yeah, she had a decent enough UFC debut, beating Irina Alexeva. Well-matched fight, for the record here, just well-matched fight. Oh, another reason to go with Curtis in the main event. That was supposed to be Allen and Vettori. Short notice for Curtis and five. Yeah, enough to really kind of make me feel okay about that. What else did we lose here? Let's see, sorry. Lucas Rocha had a couple of fights fall out. This was supposed to be Cesar Almeida and Josh Fremd. I actually might have favored him in that one. And Morgan Charrier was supposed to fight Seung-Woo Choi. And then, of course, I have Vittorian Allenson. All right. I feel like I want to lean towards Cornole there. Am I wrong to do that? I don't have a great read on either woman. Cornole comes from Muay Thai. And there's nothing. No, you know what? Let me go with Mullins. Might feel very foolish about that one, but and don't have a great feel for it. And yeah, that's the card. So tune in Saturday, MMAZona411mania.com. You know the place, you know the time. I will actually, what is the time on this one? Prelims are going to start at 1 p.m. my time. Why are you running this against WrestleMania? Why are you gutting my ability to watch General Conference, too? Ugh. Oh, I'm annoyed by that. I am so annoyed by that. Ugh. Whatever. I will make do. All right. Again, that's kind of everything I've got. So let me check Twitter or see if anything crazy has happened. If not, we'll do plugs and get out of here. I can't find anything new. So plugs it is. Monday on Damn You Hollywood, we will be reviewing Godzilla Kong: The New Empire. I don't know how to feel about this one, guys. I haven't seen it yet, but clips have started circulating online. And there's a non-trivial chance I have to be the bad guy again. I was for the Ghostbusters movie, where I just had to get up and say, sorry, this thing you've all enjoyed is not good. Because I try to stand on that. Now, it's something being not good doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. It just means you do have to look at it through that prism on occasion and be honest about it. And I don't know. Look, maybe I have a great time and I come away and we talk about it and I say, look, it's not very good, but fun was had. But I don't know. We'll see. Monday, full review, so tune in for that. Should be a good time. My regular spate of coverage, of course. WWE SmackDown, the go-home show for WrestleMania, the UFC event on Saturday. I am not currently slated to cover... Double-check this real fast. Yeah, I am not currently slated to cover anything else professional wrestling-related this week. We'll see if that holds. Again, I am permanently on deck. So, see if anybody gives me a call on that. All right. Yeah, that's it. So then again, UFC event on Saturday, back here. Next week, we review UFC on ESPN plus 98, and we preview UFC 300 with one of the laziest, most uninteresting fight posters of all time. Whoever's editing the Wikipedia on this does not. Somebody's drinking the Kool-Aid there. But 300. Full preview next week, and yeah, it's a stacked card. Don't know what to tell you. It's a really good card. It's not historic, not historically good, but it's really good. I am not going to complain about this card on paper. I'm not going to do that. Yeah. Full preview next week. Something good to talk about. Looking forward to it. All right. That's it for me, everybody. Thank you all very, very much for tuning in. I deeply appreciate each and every one of you. Anything you can do to help the show, like, comment, subscribe, star rating, written review, you know the drill. See y'all next week. Until then, stay safe out there and continue to be well, be safe, and behave.